Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. It's that time where we do the wrap of the whole week. We're going to look at Friday's trade as well as all of the week. So let's get to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
And Scott joins me. Scott is just super excited to be here. Scott, how are you?
Hi, David.
I'm doing all right. How's it going?
Excellent.
Very, very good. So, do tell about the very eventful Friday.
Yeah, Friday's trade was eventful in a couple of ways that we're not generally accustomed to, but we can talk about them a little bit more in depth. Looking at the closing numbers, the Dow was flat on the day at 14,865. Very good week it had last week, up 300 points on the week. That's a good solid 2%. NASDAQ fell 5 points for Friday's trade, closed at 3,294. That's an increase of 91 points, a good solid 3% there for the NASDAQ. S&P fell 4 on Friday, closed at 1,588, up 35 points on the week, so a very solid week there as well, 2+%. A lot of activity in the commodities complex for Friday's trade. Gold off $79 an ounce, closed at 1,485 in that range. That's off $85 to the ounce on the week. That's a greater than 5% drop for gold. I want to talk about that a little bit more in depth as we move along. Oil down 233 a barrel at 91.18. Yields on tens fell sharply at 172. And the euro dollar trade flat at $1.31 to the euro.
Yeah, there's a lot there. You know, when I saw the gold, it pulled back almost 5% just on Friday's trade. It was just not long ago that they were calling for, you know, again, the stratospheric gold prices, and we're slipping down. We've talked before on the program, we wouldn't be surprised to see $1,200.
It's got it in it. Whether or not it comes out, we'll just have to wait and see. Looking at the market, we did have several pieces of earnings information on Friday. As we had discussed earlier in the week, JP Morgan and Wells Fargo both reported earnings, both beat analyst expectations. But both had some weaker internals, some concerns, particularly with J.P. Morgan, about how much cash they're having to set aside for lawsuits and contingencies, things like that. On the economic front, really some lackluster data at best. Retail sales contracted 0.4% in March. That, according to the Commerce Department, analysts were looking for a flat reading for the month, so that was a disappointment. Also, we had a 9-month low in the consumer sentiment number. This is the number we get from the University of Michigan. It's a diffusion index. We were looking for 78.5, and we got 72.3, so that's not so great. Producer price index came in also on Friday. Biggest drop we've seen there in 10 months, falling 0.6%. That's actually good news for Fed watchers because it indicates very tame inflation, which we like, if we like to see all that money flying into the system. JCPenney, which we talked about all week last week, is apparently tired of hemorrhaging cash. And so they're talking to the Blackstone Group to see if they can get a $500 million infusion based on a 5-year note. I most certainly would not lend JCPenney money for 5 years at any rate.
Nope.
Looking overseas, Tokyo's Nikkei closed lower on Friday in what has recently been a rare day. The Nikkei average has just been on fire this year, and particularly first quarter, up 30+%. Bank of Japan Governor Kuroda, who we've talked about a couple of times here, announced that his inflation target is a little bit flexible. So they're going through the same thing there that we're going through here. Everybody's watching the Fed to see when they turn the spigot off. Also, South Korea's KOSPI index finished down almost a point and a half for Friday's close. Investors are concerned about tensions with North Korea. Looking at the week ahead, Monday brings us the Empire State Manufacturing Surveys. That gives us a look at the manufacturing activity in the state of New York. We also have the housing market index and earnings from Citigroup. We're going to be knee-deep in earnings this week. Tuesday, we get the CPI number for further inflation indication. We also get the housing starts, as well as earnings, among others, from Coca-Cola, Goldman Sachs, Intel, and Yahoo. Wednesday, we get the beige book from the Fed, which I do endure. Also, we have earnings from Bank of America and eBay. Thursday, the weekly jobless claims number, as always, and earnings from Morgan Stanley, PepsiCo, Philip Morris, IBM, Microsoft. A lot going on Thursday. And then Friday is pretty much strictly an earnings day. We'll be looking for General Electric, McDonald's, Honeywell, Schlumberger, and several others as well. So that's your week in review and the week ahead.
Very good, Scott. All right, so we're going to do this. We're going to come back and dig in a little deeper with Scott on some of these financial topics and get to it. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
And we are back, so we're going to break it down a little bit further. And, you know, I was going to ask you a little bit, one of the things that's interesting to me about Japan, you commented on their market responding very well to the, you know, the stimulus, as ours has with, you know, putting more money into the system. The thing that's interesting is that they've been doing this for a very, very long time. This is not a new concept, but it's as if finally they're, you know, quote unquote, either, depending on how you look at it, what side you're on, either they're finally getting it right or they're going off the deep end.
Yeah, the level of aggressiveness definitely has stepped up. And quantitative easing, I think, makes a little bit more sense for a purely export economy such as Japan's than it does for ours, which is a little bit more balanced.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to ask that because it seems like they finally have, you know, maybe they just need to really stoke the fire well instead of just this trickling.
Yeah, they have to keep a very close eye on inflation. There's no question about that. But for the time being, it seems to be getting things back on track. Remember, they suffered a terrible economic blow during the tsunami of last year.
Well, and when you say inflation, are we talking about their internal inflation or are
internal
you
inflation?
Okay, because versus the other currencies, yeah. You know, they're devaluing, right?
Yeah, internal meaning the buying power of their residents. I mean, obviously the residents are not going to be happy if they start to see 5, 6, 8, 10% inflation.
Right. So internally they could have issues, but they are devaluing against other major currencies by what they're doing.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about gold. We did see gold fall below $1,500 an ounce for the first time since July 2011, as you know. That's technically bear market territory, down more than 20% from its August 2011 highs. Even worse, silver futures, generally speaking, when we talk about quoting numbers and closing numbers, they're not really closing numbers because we're looking at futures and it's a little bit complicated, but it gives us a decent idea of what the ounce price is. Silver futures, even worse, off 5% on Friday to $26.30. That's a 45% drop from its April 2011 high. Part of the problem with gold on Friday's trade were reports coming out of Cyprus that said they had 40 tons of gold and they're just going to go ahead and sell it to try to get some money in the till. And the problem there is that, well, then traders start to extrapolate that line of thought to think, well, how much gold does Italy have? How much gold does Spain have? And how much gold is actually going to be hitting the market as these countries try to assist in their bailout because the bailout money is not going to be adequate. So they have to find other ways. On top of that, Goldman Sachs, as you know, in the middle of last week came out with a call to short gold, which Goldman Sachs is kind of like the Fed in some cases. They hold a lot of gold, and if they say sell gold.
So you're telling me that Goldman Sachs is sacking the gold.
Yeah, they're selling all the gold, and so some trouble there. And traders with gold have to be very, very careful about gold when it starts to produce a price level around $1,200 or $1,300 an ounce because that starts to get to the point where it's not worth it for the miners to take it out of the ground.
That's very interesting.
So if you're holding miner stocks and you start to see the level of gold continue to come down, they will at some point shut down if it's not profitable. And if they shut down, they don't make revenue.
Well, and you're speaking of the volume, for Friday's trade, you know, the average volume on the gold spider, the GLD, basically the way you can buy it in your portfolio, and the average volume is about 10 million units or shares in that investment, and the volume went five times the average.
Yeah, and most of that was opening pressure. That 10 million share level was exceeded by about 10 o'clock on Friday.
Wow, amazing. Well, so what should we, I already know the answer, but what should we expect from, you know, those that are pushing gold hard, the gold pitchmen, as we call them? You know, is this going to be declared as a unique, unexpected, but fortuitous buying opportunity?
I think it depends on whether or not those people in their own portfolios want to accumulate or distribute gold. That really is what it comes down to. They're more interested in profit for themselves than their soon-to-be clients based on midnight television advertisement.
Okay, so be careful with that. It may or may not be a good buying opportunity. It seems like there's a lot of downward pressure.
Yep, and commodities can really go down south very quickly when they get momentum, as gold and silver has. The other big headline for the week last week was that there's a former, and you'll appreciate this as a former auditor yourself, former KPMG partner charged with insider trading. He was passing tips off on firms that he was responsible personally for producing the audits for publicly traded companies. He was giving some information to his golfing buddy.
They've got pictures of him doing it.
Yeah, it's really an unbelievable case. What happened was the co-conspirator, if you will, Mr. Brian Shaw, who's not the KPMG partner, he's a jeweler in California. His brokerage firm, which I believe was Fidelity, saw some very unusual activity in his accounts, shut his accounts off, called the SEC and said, hey, you probably ought to look at this. They went and interviewed Mr. Shaw, and he said, it wasn't me, it was this other fellow, Scott London. He's a partner at KPMG. And then the FBI got involved, and they had wiretaps and pictures.
He cut a deal.
It's a mess. But it is a little surprising to me to see an auditor, particularly a partner of a firm like KPMG.
That is surprising.
Involved in something like this. It doesn't surprise me when hedge fund guys do it, but this one was a little surprising.
Well, unfortunately, that's the reality of the world we live in. That kind of thing is going to happen from time to time. And hopefully, not very often. All right, so let's just take a quick break and we'll come right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
So we are back, and we're glad you stayed with us. So I have to ask you, Scott, before I let you continue with your stack of stuff. So there's this whole thing going about with some of the budget proposals in Washington that out of the White House, we've got this proposal that they're going to cap the amount that your IRA can be at $3 million because, quote unquote, from the White House spokesperson says, you know, you shouldn't need more than $3 million to fund a retirement. Any more than that's unnecessary. And so that's why we're doing it. So the question I would ask, if that is true, and all you have to do is agree with me. You know, that's how I'm setting this up, okay? So if that's true...
That is my forte, is it not?
So if that's true, then if $3 million is enough, so then is the White House going to also communicate to Mr. Buffett, one of their staunch supporters, that $3 million is enough? You don't need the other $49,997 million? Just give it up. Don't need it.
Well, I don't think anybody's proposing that they give it up. I think they're proposing it not be in tax-sheltered accounts.
In other words, they want you to bring it out so they can tax it.
Yeah, which is not a new concept. The level of contribution is capped anyway. So it's really just an extension of an existing concept, which nobody really seems to have a problem with. And most people who are squawking about the $3 million IRA don't have $3 million. So personally, I really don't have a problem with it. On top of that, from everything I've read, it has absolutely zero chance of passing.
That's what I thought. I just find it, I just don't like it. I find it hypocritical and... You know, I just don't like it. So this is my opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to say something about it. So,
well, there you go.
There you go. That's done.
That is a cogent argument if ever there was one.
So let's move on to some serious stuff.
All right. I want to tell you this story while Lisa has her back turned to me so I can't see her roll her eyes. PC outlook darkens gruesomely as sales slump deepens in the first quarter. There really are some terrible numbers coming out about PCs. First quarter PC shipments for 2013 fell 14% worldwide from the same point last year. That's a very big drop.
So riddle me this. Why then Dell is at its prices come up, of course, with the bidding war, so to speak, that's going to occur. That's a lot of what Dell does.
Yeah, it's really a little bit of a question to me. I certainly wouldn't want to put any money in that, especially personal money or client money. The numbers have been going down for several years in a row now as people get more and more comfortable with tablets and handhelds. Part of the blame for this is being laid squarely on the feet of Steve Ballmer, CEO of Microsoft. You know, he was just so adamant about having this Windows 8 come out and revolutionize the PC market. Well, it flopped, and people said, well, you know, instead of sticking with this PC and work with this Windows 8 that I cannot work with, let me see if I can work with a tablet or a handheld, and they are definitely going that way. Well, the next threat to PCs being wearable computing devices, so really a lot of pressure on the PC market.
Well, just think about how often you actually grab your iPhone or your tablet just to do a quick lookup of something on, you know, the internet. I do it all the time.
I track stocks in my office with a TV and a computer in there on my phone.
There you go.
Speaking of industries that have a gloomy outlook, here's five big retailers. This was from Yahoo Finance. They analyzed five retailers that they think will be gone in 5 years. The first of them, JCPenney.
I knew you were going to say that.
No surprise there. And they have a massive problem at JCPenney in that Mr. Johnson, the CEO who they let go last week, was halfway through completely gutting stores and doing this whole new vision of JCPenney stores. Well, half of them are gutted. Half of them haven't been touched in several years because they're completely outdated. So all of them need a big influx of cash. They either have to put them back to where they were and freshen the old ones, or take the old ones and put them to where the other ones are now. It's a mess.
Do they own them, or are they mostly rentals?
Well, they own the store and the brand and the infrastructure. They rent the land.
Okay.
Generally speaking.
Okay. Wow.
But you can imagine if you were an owner of a shopping mall, among the other names here, Sears Holdings, which people have been calling for the demise of Sears Holdings for several years. Also on the list, Barnes & Noble. So these are three big anchors of
Barnes & Noble. Say
shopping.
It's not so.
Yeah, they actually still have shares. The other two on the list, Staples. As they say, we are becoming increasingly paperless. And the other, Radio Shack, which I would venture to guess that several people were not aware, is still open.
That is very interesting, Scott. I think that you could definitely see at least a couple of those go by the wayside this next, 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me a bit. I mean, we've seen Borders, we've seen Circuit City. Circuit City was incredibly poorly mismanaged, but also a Best Buy, I think, should most certainly be on that list as well.
Well, Samsung might turn that one around.
I doubt it.
Okay.
Uncle Sam made $100 billion on student debt in the last couple of years. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't.
All right. Well, the combination of low borrowing costs for the government and fixed interest rates for students has generated a profit to the government to the tune of $101.8 billion. Basically, the mechanics of it are this. The government borrows money to lend to students at Treasury rates, at 10-year Treasury rates, which we all know is about 2%. The rate that students have to pay back on Stafford loans is fixed since 2006 at 6.8. So that's about a 5% spread.
Not a bad moneymaker.
It's not a bad moneymaker at all.
Put it toward the debt.
Obviously, there are some defaults, and that's a big concern among student debts. But a 5% spread, and when we talk about the spread, that's exactly what we're talking about, the difference between what somebody can borrow at and what they can lend the money back out to. A 5% spread for government money is pretty good.
You know, maybe this is something the government can do more of. Maybe they can, they borrow it too, and they lend out to
mortgages,
car
loans.
All kinds of things. Make that money.
Credit card.
Sure. Whatever you want.
It'll be a profit center before you know it.
I like it.
Also from Washington, D.C., I want to tell you, Fidelity Investments President Ronald Hanley is talking about the 2006 Pension Protection Act, which you may recall allows employees to be automatically enrolled in their 401k plan with a 3% savings rate default. He's saying that default savings rate should be moved up to 6%. And that increases on a year-over-year basis should be accelerated to the point where people are saving 10 or 12%. The data shows that nearly 4 out of 10 retiree households do not have sufficient income to cover their expenses, and that problem is sure to get worse, I think, over the next generation.
Yes, and of course you've got the balance of that person being able to make those choices. But these are all things that are it's a default, but then people can opt out.
Right.
Okay.
And he did maintain the option to opt out, and let us keep in mind that Fidelity Investments makes money when people contribute to 401ks.
That's kind of convenient. Yeah, no, let's go for a 15% automatic enrollment deduction.
Yeah.
All right. Scott, I know you got more. Lisa, I'm not going to miss her telling me it's time for a break again. So we're going to do a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back with more exhilarating commentary from Mr. Connor.
David, what is going on in the confections market?
I don't know. What is going on, Scott?
Well, I told you a couple of times about maple syrup being stolen.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So have you got another heist of sugar?
Indeed, I do. 5 metric tons, that's 5.5 of our good old American tons, of Nutella chocolate hazelnut spread stolen from the German town of Bad Hersfeld a couple of weeks ago. It's about $20,000 worth of Nutella.
Somebody had a hankering.
It's shocking, really. German news agency also reported that thieves have previously stolen a load of energy drinks from the same location.
Got to get their sugar high.
Well, that's the commodities market for you. I also want to tell you, I told you a couple weeks ago about Mike Ruzioni, who was the captain of the Miracle hockey team that won the Olympic gold medal, that he was auctioning off his jersey, which you were remarkably underwhelmed by. Well, this one maybe is a little bit more up your alley. Captain Kirk's phaser, one-of-a-kind phaser rifle that William Shatner used the second pilot.
I remember that episode. That was a great one. I remember that.
Right. Well, if you had $231,000, you could have purchased it from Julian's auctions last Saturday.
You can use that to kill a good Starfleet officer gone bad when he got this psychic ability and he had to shoot him at the very end.
And now it is I who am underwhelmed.
Come on, that was interesting that I knew exactly which episode you were talking about.
Oh, it's interesting. All right.
All right. I know you've got a phaser in your desk drawer. You're not fooling anybody.
If I had it, I'd use it. Also, at the same auction, a Munchkin's flower pot from The Wizard of Oz that went for $15,000, a flying suit worn by Christopher Reeve in Superman 4, $25,000, and a nightshirt that belonged to Marilyn Monroe for $15,000.
Fascinating, yep. As Spock would say.
Here's a little marketing news. Kool-Aid Man is getting a new look. You remember Kool-Aid Man?
He's going to be a little slimmer?
Oh, yeah, that Kool-Aid Man. Well, he's actually going to become computer-generated rather than a guy in a great big foam suit.
Technology just keeps getting in on our business.
On top of that, he's going to speak and have a character. So this is the first time he's been remade, if you will, since 2000. The Kool-Aid Man character has been in existence since 1954. Kool-Aid under a lot of pressure because of these liquid water additives like Mio, you know, Mio. Oh, yeah. I don't know about the Mio, but anyway, they're killing Kool-Aid.
Well, adapt, change, or get run over or get out of the way.
Yep. So
Kool-Aid Man has to adapt.
Coming to you.
What about Michelin Man? Is he going to have to do the same thing?
I imagine he will, although he's computer generated now.
He's been computer generated for a while because he's throwing tires and all that.
Yeah, he's a superhero type.
Okay.
New changes are coming to your ATM. Many ATMs are doing away with paper receipts. They're going to get set up to where they're automatically emailing you the receipt rather than printing out the paper receipt. I like that.
That makes sense.
Good from a security, and it cuts down on paper a little bit. Citibank and Wells Fargo already have that service. We have talked about this a little bit in the past, but Chase and PNC are starting to roll out ATMs that are capable of spitting money out, if you will, in $1, $5, $10, and $20 bills rather than just strictly the $20 bills. So that's handy there. This interesting, I think. Some ATMs are going to cardless ATM access. Several smartphones are now being built with what they call near-field communication technology, NFC, which allows your mobile phone to communicate to certain devices when they're in close proximity. So basically, you hold your phone up to the ATM, and that's your ATM card.
Oh, that's good. One more thing that makes it convenient for me to lose my phone.
They are going to set up ATMs that will allow you to pay credit cards and loan payments. Bank of America already has that capability. And some ATMs are now actually being built with a live teller video conferencing, which kind of, to me, is the antithesis of the entire point of the ATM.
Well, they just want somebody just to look at you while you take your money out.
Yep. And then finally, I want to tell you about today being Monday, April 15th, your last day to file a tax return. If you get audited, the IRS has said that they will take a look at your Facebook and Twitter accounts to make sure that you're not more wealthy than you say.
Living large and not paying the government.
Yeah, if you put it on Facebook and Twitter, some people are up in arms about this, but to me, if you put it on Facebook and Twitter,
it's public.
It's public.
That's
so public. Too bad for you if you get caught up in that trap.
All right. Well, do we need one more break, Lisa? Lisa says one more break, Scott. So hold the balance of your incredibly interesting commentary. We will be right back.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
And we are back. Scott is just overwhelming us today with information, so I wanted to ask him a few questions. Okay, so where are we now? And as far as you can tell, I know you're a big fan of the Beige Book and some of the other governmental resources. Where do you see right now where we are with this whole increasing money supply with our continuing to, quote-unquote, print money, which is not really printed, is digitally created, and then they buy back our own debt, or buy the debt that's being issued simultaneously. But Where do you see the supply? You think we're going to continue for a while at this $80 billion a month injection? Are they going to try to taper? What are you seeing as kind of, I know we have to kind of read between the lines, but yeah. What's it look like?
Well, really what I think I see, and mostly I think this is what the market sees, so therefore that's what I see, is that the economic news is nowhere near good enough for the feds to turn off the tap. Even if we look at Friday's four data points, were all terrible. The jobs number prior to that was horrible, and there's virtually no sign of inflation. So those are the conditions under which the Fed will continue to put money into the system. Now, on the other side of that is Chairman Bernanke and the Fed presidents who are coming out in a lot of speeches and talking about tapering. You'll hear them say the word taper all the time. But I think they're trying to get ahead of a two-year process of tapering, not a six-month process of tapering. So if you look at where the economy is, the lack of growth in jobs, most particular, the lack of good solid data points anywhere other than the housing market, and the market really did not sell off in the face of the potential of a nuclear bomb from Nazi across the Pacific, terrible jobs number. The market had a 300-point week this past week. That tells me that the market thinks the money is going to come.
Well, help everybody understand, Scott. Let's just say one day, you know, Bernanke wakes up and says, okay, that's it, and they, for whatever reason, says to the rest of the folks at the Fed, we're going to stop this, and the $80 billion stops. What's the impact?
Well, without notice, if it just happened all at once, it could be 20-30% on the Dow.
Holy
easily.
Moly. Yeah, okay, so
easily.
That's why they're using this taper concept.
Right.
Because what's going to happen then is there would have to be a buyer also for the debt being issued by our government to run the government,
that's
which is $80 billion. Because if they're putting in $80 billion, all $80 billion is being used, right, to buy debt.
Right.
So there would have to be somebody else. And that would actually make a major impact on these yields on 10-year treasuries, which now still in the 1.7.
Yeah, no question.
That
if you were going to lend money to the United States government, let me ask you this question.
Okay.
If you were going to lend money to the United States government for 10 years, what would you say if you're writing the contract, okay, the interest rate is X?
I tell you, at a minimum, it'd be 4 or 5%.
Yeah, I think probably in the 4 or 5 range as well. So,
that tells you what the yield would have to be. So, bonds, therefore, and this is why really the point of this is, as people think about how they're going to invest going forward, and all this discussion of the bond buying and the injection of money into the system by the Fed, when that stops or when it does taper, there will be an impact on bond prices at the Treasury level, and then, of course, that translates to all the other bonds, corporate bonds and municipal bonds. They're all going to be affected, and prices could drop.
Yeah, which also impacts interest rates for net borrowers, which is almost every corporation, so their expenses go up, their profits come down. It's bad news all around.
It's bad, and so it's something for people to be, though, with their portfolios aware of. Don't go out and buy a whole bunch of ultra-long-term bonds, especially low quality, high risk bonds. You really put yourself in a bad spot just because you're trying to get a little bit of extra return.
Yep.
All right, that's all the time we have, ladies and gentlemen. Be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.